Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vai Bhakti, Grantara Srila Bhagavatam ki, Jai Giriraj Maharaj, Jai Nitai Goprema. So tonight we'll begin chapter 15 of the sixth canto, which is the pastime of. So far we read the 14th chapter, the very beginning of the pastime. So does anyone remember what took place? Any other points? Any other points? So we see in the beginning of the pastime that Maharaj Chitraketu is receiving the great sage, whose name is Angira Muni. So Angira Muni, he gives a blessing to Maharaj Chitraketu, who is lamenting. He seems very unhappy. So he gives a blessing that you will have a child, but the child will be the source of happiness and distress simultaneously. So he cannot fully understand what this means. And then Maharaj Chitraketu, he gives the remnants of the jagya to his first wife, and she gives birth to the child, but the co-wives become envious of the attention that Maharaj Chitraketu is giving to the wife and the new child, and they poison the child. So then when everyone in the palace and the kingdom hears this news, they all come running, and everyone's extremely distressed. So now we'll hear chapter 15 about the appearance of Narada and Angira Muni, and how they begin to preach to Maharaj Chitraketu. He was very powerful. This pastime is also told in the BBC book Coming Back, and that was the first book that I read when I first came towards Krishna consciousness. And this pastime had a very powerful effect on me, especially these instructions which would now be given by Narada and Angira to Chitraketu. Very powerful instructions. So we'll read these instructions. Tonight we'll go from verses 1 to 16. And then next week, tomorrow I'm planning to go to India. So then next week we'll try to have a phone call. Chaitanya Prabhu will ring. And if all goes well, I will pick up. And if all goes well, you will all hear my voice, and I will give class, and if you have any questions, you can ask. So we'll try to make it as lively as possible, even though it won't be exactly the same as being face-to-face, but I would appreciate everyone being here, and we'll do our best to make it as successful as possible. If it doesn't work, then we'll call it off. If for some reason the phone keeps cutting out or something like that. But if all goes well, hopefully it'll work and then we'll continue. Okay? Okay. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, while King Chitraketu, overcome by lamentation, lay like a dead body at the side of the dead body of his son, the two great sages, Narada and Angira, instructed him about spiritual consciousness as follows. O King, what relationship does the dead body for which you lament have with you? And what relationship do you have with him? You may say that you are now related as father and son, but do you think this relationship existed before? Does it truly exist now? Will it continue in the future? She rather loved the community.
The instructions given by Narada and Ahura Muni are the true spiritual instructions for the illusion conditioned soul. This world is temporary, but because of our previous karma, we come here and accept bodies, creating temporary relationships in terms of society, friendship, love, nationality, and community, which are all niche at death. These temporary relations did not exist in the past, nor will they exist in the future. Therefore, at the present moment, the so-called relationships are illusion.
So what are the points?
Narada Muni Angira Muni are giving the true instructions to the conditioned souls that this relationship is only temporary. It was not there previously and won't happen in the future.
Santa,
yes.
Most of the time, the work of spiritual master can say that, especially when you're going through a path of sitting in the church or in class.
Any other point?
Our actual issue is with Krishna actually, that's commonly listed. All the issues are illusions. The temporary material relationship with all illusions. Except the spiritual master and the Krishna.
Can you keep meeting
Narada
for all he always adjusts according to the circumstance. So like to Tatina Bhaji, he gave that analogy, and now of course to Amira, according to Chitra Giri, he gave direct instructions, and then to Mara, he adjusted, and so he
You heard the point. Any other points? So this is basic Atman Tattva, or Divya Gyan, which is given, as Jagannath Ram Prabhu pointed out, at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, from verses 11 to 30 in the second chapter. Then Krishna begins with a section of Gyan. So he gives knowledge of difference between matter and spirit. So as the Srimad Bhagavatam tells us, that the purpose of the Bhagavatam, one of the purposes is to differentiate between matter and spirit. So in the very beginning of spiritual life, in the very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, then Krishna, he differentiates between matter and spirit. So in order to overcome illusion, we have to learn to see with spiritual vision. Shastra Chakshush. Or in other words, the way that the scripture is describing that we see. So at least at this point in time, Srila Prabhupada explains, our understanding is theoretical. At least theoretically we understand these things, but factually speaking we don't fully realize it. Just like I said, when my father passed away a few years ago, then I realized that, you know, these things are still theoretical to me, to a degree, because I could deal with it. But still, because of bodily reaction, we can't fully transcend the attachments. So when we lose a relative or we lose a dear friend, we don't fully overcome the attachment at this point in time. It's tempered. In other words, there's like a mixing of spiritual understanding, which allows us to get through it different to what non-devotees will get through the situation. The non-devotees will quite often fall apart in these situations. Devotees don't do that because they have a higher understanding, higher knowledge. So they don't fall apart, they continue. And but still, these things affect us because we're still bodily orientated. We haven't fully transcended. So Prabhupada explains that for us, at least it is theoretical at this point in time. Because the theory is good. And if we keep practicing the theory, then we will overcome the illusion. So then we continue to practice it. But simultaneously, we should not become artificially or prematurely proud. Sometimes devotees, you know, we speak all the time, we say, this is just the bodily concept of life, and this is just Maya, and you should not be like this. But then as soon as something happens to us, then immediately we're affected by it. So we shouldn't be so proud, and we should not, you know, pass judgments. You know, quite often we give classes, and the karmis do this, and they do that, and like this. But we're not much better, factually speaking. Of course, we're a little better because we have some spiritual understanding, but we have not completely transcended. So we should not become artificially puffed up, thinking that we are very advanced in spiritual knowledge, because the test will come in the near future. All of us will face the test. When someone leaves who is very close to us, or when we ourselves, when our lives are threatened, and then you'll actually see what our realization actually is. So we're progressing, and we should continue to progress. And ultimately, the Bhagavatam says that we should understand the difference between matter and spirit. And that is the 12th aim of Shastric study, is to develop Shastra Chakshush, or the divine vision, and actually understand that everything in this material world is temporary. Okay. Once again, it's easy to say it. We all say it's temporary, but we're so attached to it all. Like that. And then we even say, well, we're not so attached to it all, but actually we are quite attached. Like that. Of course, we're a lot better situated than the non-devotees, but still, we're very attached. So by practicing Krishna consciousness, we can gradually transcend, and we can understand the difference between matter and spirit, which is what the Bhagavatam is leading us towards. Any points?
I was just reading about after all the 100 sons were killed, they were not dealing with the Pandavas nicely the first time when they met them. Dhritarashtra actually liked him, but Bhishma and Kandari were going to curse them, but Yudhishthira had to stop them. Don't curse the Pandavas, they are always being like this. So they were so overcome with grief because of attachment, even though they knew their sons were not right. Because of the bodily.
Yep. Prabhupada says that Dhritarashtra was blind materially and spiritually because he let Duryodhana go too far from the beginning. He wouldn't stop his son. So, any other points? O King, as small particles of sand sometimes come together and are sometimes separated due to the force of the waves, the living entities who have accepted material bodies sometimes come together and are sometimes separated by the force of time. Did you write it, please?
The misunderstanding of the conditioned soul is the body conception of God. The body is material within the body is the soul. This is a spiritual understanding. Unfortunately, one who is in ignorance under the spell of material illusion accepts the body to be the sun. He cannot understand that the body is matter. Like small particles of sand, the bodies come together and are separated by the force of time, and people constantly lament for unification and separation. Unless one knows this, there is no question of happiness. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita 2.30. This is the first instruction given by the Lord. Dehi nostrin yata dehi, kaumaram yavarnam jara, tatha dehaam tera kasi kakiras sukaram jara. As the embodied soul continuously passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body of death. The self-realized soul is not divided by spiritual condition. We are not the body, we are spiritual beings stretched in the body. Our real interest lies in understanding this simple fact. Then we can make further spiritual progress. Otherwise, if we remain in the bodily conception of life, our miserable material existence will continue forever. Political adjustment, social welfare, medical assistance, and other programs we have manufactured for peace and happiness will never endure. We shall have to undergo the sufferings of material life one after another. Therefore, material life is said to be dukkha and ashashvatam. It is a reservoir of miserable conditions.
So, what are the points here? Any other points? You have to speak up just so they can all.
The first step mentioned in the first step is spiritual realization or spiritual education, knowing that they are not God. Another response is
I was considering Krishna Prabhupada this morning. He said in his class that it is very easy to understand even logically the soul transmigrates at the time of death. As the person experiences the change in the body during his very lifetime, logically he should be able to accept the conclusion that after the death there is a change of body, but not the same body but a new body. So the soul actually transmigrates. Prabhupada says that this is such a simple logic to understand, but the people cannot understand this. To realize this, one requires a spiritual master. So in the Angira Muni and Narad Muni are manifested to basically give this realization to King Chitra.
Something similar to what is being discussed in recent times, but as happened, they're talking about a God particle, which after doing 1,000 trillion times of collision and 50 years of experiment, they find that there's a God particle existing. And here we are already talking about a soul, what's the difference between the soul and the body. We've already established that, and this is what's been said thousands of years. If they would have just come to Bhagavad Gita and looked at this, I mean, they wouldn't have wasted 50 years of their life just trying to identify the God particle.
At least they tell us that's what they found.
Yeah.
After they spent $3 billion.
Yeah.
Then they have to say they found something.
Yeah.
whether or not they even found anything. And we knew it was there already. But there's none. This is the smallest atomic particle that they can perceive like that.
I mean, who knows if they even saw it or not?
They're saying that whatever the hypothesis and stuff, whatever looks evident to them, to prove that will take many more years of prove whatever they're saying.
Another $3 billion. Not logical, these people. But who cares anyway? It doesn't make any difference to anyone.
They're looking at the ground.
I don't know, 27 kilometers of track and then elbow. So
this no living being can live the dead. There's oxygen there.
Anything else? I would say many of the senior devotees in this con, our spiritual masters, I would say you'll see the example in their consciousness. You'll see. Yeah, they're very advanced in their consciousness.
My guru was his mother passed away, and apparently he did all the samskaras, he did virtually everything for the home, and he was basically showing the attachment, and at the same time he didn't really sort of he did everything what was supposed to be done on a superficial level, I suppose. But then at the same time, this is in the early years when I was just starting in Krishna consciousness. I was fortunate to be with him just alone. And apparently he came right close to me and looked into my eye and said, "I'm not this body." And I didn't understand exactly what he was trying to say. And he repeated that two or three times, "I'm not this body." And he was really serious about what he was saying. And coming to think of it over the years, I mean, I believe that he would have been experiencing it, that he's actually feeling that I'm not this body.
The first point in the purport is that we come together like grains of sand in the ocean. So the grains of sand come together, but then they separate. So logically speaking, or factually speaking, this is what is taking place. We've come together in this lifetime with a certain bunch of grains of sand, but in the future we will all be separated again. Even sometimes people stay together for several lifetimes, but generally we separate. So we give the example quite often that, say, like if you go back 50 years, basically most of us, say 80 years, because no one in this room is over 80 years old. So you go back 80 years, we're in a completely different situation. And we were extremely attached to the family members that we had at that point in time. But then if someone came now and showed us a photo, right, of the people that we were completely attached to 80 years ago, they would mean nothing to us. But then the situation we find ourselves in now, then we're extremely attached to that, and the people who we're with right now. But then if you go 80 years into the future from here, and then you show a picture of the people that you're attached to now, that will mean they'll mean nothing to you. Although at the moment you're so attached to them. So this is our illusion. So it's something to contemplate and something to try to realize. Because it is a temporary situation. So it doesn't mean that we have to be artificial or inhuman. Even Prabhupada, you see in the final days, he showed many human emotions like that. He often spoke about his life in his early days of his life. When his son, Vrindavan Das, came to see him, Prabhupada even cried. And he said that, "Your mother was a very good woman. It was me who caused all the trouble." Prabhupada did like that. Very human kind of emotions. Of course, we understand that Prabhupada was because Prabhupada took sannyas, he left the family. The wife was troublesome to some degree. So maybe he was soothing the consciousness of Vrindavan Das, the son. So he was making these apologies like that to make him feel good and like that. But still, Prabhupada showed these basic emotions, like human-like emotions. The Prabhupada was definitely beyond in consciousness, beyond this situation. So it is not wrong for devotees to emote. And we don't have to become hard. We don't have to become like stones. We don't have to not have affection for our children and our wife and our husband and our family members. We don't have to be like that. But still, we have to cultivate this higher realization in due course of time. Because the fact is that we are simply here for a temporary point in time. And the fact is that we'll only be with these family members and in this situation for a temporary period of time. And we've been through it so many times in the past, and it's meant so much to us so many times over. So it's just another situation we happen to find ourselves in. So we have to understand this higher knowledge in due course of time. Now the second point that Prabhupada makes is that all of us need to understand this simple fact if we want to progress in spiritual life. Prabhupada says our real interest lies in understanding this simple fact. It is a simple fact. We're not the body, we are the soul. And it is a fundamental fact. It is the first thing that Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita, asochanam vasochasvam. It is the first teaching, yet it is so hard to understand it. Just like one day I was speaking to His Holiness Prahlada Nandaswami, and Maharaj was saying, he was giving a class or something, and I said, oh, Maharaj, I can't remember what happened, he said something to me like, oh, what should I speak on? And I said, well, you know, I think I said, like, you know, you speak whatever you want to speak. And he said, oh, I'll speak on these verses from Bhagavad Gita. Yeah, you're not the body or the soul. And I said, yeah, but Maharaj, we've all heard that before. It's like, it's, you know, like, we all hear that all the time. It's just basic. And Maharaj just looked at me and said, but no one understands it. So, you know, we can say, oh, I've heard that so many times. And we hear it all the time, but none of us understand it. And it's the first thing Krishna taught in the Bhagavad Gita. But none of us understand it. First thing the Bhagavatam teaches is you have to differentiate between matter and spirit. But none of us can differentiate between matter and spirit. So Prabhupada says this is the simple fact. This is the beginning of spiritual life. This is what we have to endeavor to understand gradually. And then Prabhupada says, political adjustments, social welfare work, medical assistance and other programs we have manufactured for peace and happiness will never endure. So you can make all sorts of adjustments externally, but it doesn't really make any difference. That's why when Prabhupada first met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then Prabhupada was a follower of Gandhi. Prabhupada was a Gandhi follower. He used to follow Gandhi. And then he met Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and they were debating. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada was saying to him, we have to liberate India. We have to become free. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that, what is the point? Whether you're liberated or not liberated, still all of you are trapped in the cycle of repeated birth and death. So this is your real duty, to become liberated from the material atmosphere, not just the British Raj, but there is a much higher thing that you have to deal with. So he was preaching to him, and Prabhupada said that he became defeated by his Guru Maharaj. And Prabhupada said he liked it. Being defeated by his guru. So we can make all sorts of material adjustments, but it doesn't solve any of the problems of life. Just like, since I've been a devotee, I've never voted. Although in this country, legally, you have to vote. But I haven't voted the whole time, because it doesn't make any difference whatsoever to my life. Oh, very little difference. Maybe it makes a tiny bit of difference, but I don't even know. When I first joined the movement, I didn't even know who the President of America was. You know, when I joined the movement, it was Ronald Reagan. And then it became George Bush Sr. I didn't even know they changed. And then it became Clinton. I didn't even know that happened. And it didn't make it, it doesn't make any difference to our lives, practically speaking. So whether you have this political situation, that political situation, you can change all the things in the material world, but it really doesn't make any difference. The only point is we have to understand that we are not the body, but we are the soul. And even Prabhupada says, he says, political adjustments, social welfare work, medical assistance. Interesting, because I've been listening, studying these lectures at Harishori Prabhu about Prabhupada's pastimes. One of the seminars is about health. And very interesting, Prabhupada's perspective on health in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada himself would never take allopathic medicine. Prabhupada actually practically never took medicine. Even when they offered him Ayurvedic medicine and naturopathic medicine and things like that, Prabhupada wouldn't take it. Even homeopathic medicine, which I personally actually didn't have much faith in it, and then I had that accident, and then Nirmala Mataji was giving it to me, and actually it worked a lot, so now I have faith in it. But Prabhupada wasn't denying that there was nothing in homeopathy, but when they offered to him, he said, it's just coloured water. They offered him homeopathic medicine. Prabhupada said, it's just coloured water. He wouldn't take it. Not that he was saying that there was nothing in it, but he didn't want it. And when they offered him allopathic, one time he was so sick that he couldn't even do his translation work. Prabhupada was so sick. And Harishori Prabhu said, what is the problem? And he said, it's my kidney. You know, the kidney was giving Prabhupada severe pain. He couldn't even translate. He was in so much pain. So then Harishori Prabhu said, okay, can we get the doctor to come? So Prabhupada agreed. He said, okay, bring the doctor. So the next day the doctor came, and then the doctor prescribed 5 different types of medicine. You know, this one and that one and that one. And then the doctor left, and Harishori Prabhu said, okay, now we'll go and get the medicine. So they went and got all the medicine, and Harishori Prabhu went and brought it, but he said he knew the Prabhupada wasn't going to take it. So he went and brought it all, and he brought it back, and then he gave it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada just, you know, he said, I'm not going to take it. And then Prabhupada said, allopathic medicine, it just means they mix a few chemicals together and they give it a long name that no one can understand. And that's allopathic medicine. Because Prabhupada himself was a chemist. So he knew. He knew the situation. So it was interesting. He wouldn't even take medicine. Even when he was very sick, at the very end, when he was very sick, generally, Harishori Prabhu would say, he wouldn't even take medicine. He wouldn't even take medicine. And he kept repeating. In the final day, he repeated it continuously. He said, whatever happens, don't let them take me to hospital. He said, if I go into a coma, or if anything happens, he said, don't let them take me to a hospital, and don't let them connect me to tubes. He said this repeatedly, like that. He didn't have faith in these things. So that's what he's saying here. You know, this material world's going to come and go. Right? So he said, by political adjustment, by social adjustment, by medical adjustment, it's going to come and go anyway. So that doesn't mean that we don't go to the doctors, or it doesn't mean we don't look after our health. Because if you actually read the his statements about health, he's very emphatic about health, actually. Prabhupada actually, there's one point where he says the Dhananjaya Prabhu, he says health first and then Krishna consciousness. If you're not healthy in your body and your mind, you can't be Krishna conscious. Right? It's too difficult like that. But at the same time, and Harishori Prabhu was pointing this out, this was just Prabhupada's personal preference. Because Prabhupada was a person. His personal preference was not to take medicine. He just wouldn't take it. Because Prabhupada was Prabhupada, that was his choice. Doesn't mean that we should not take medicine. But allopathic medicine is dangerous. Personally, I don't take it, allopathic medicine. Prabhupada didn't take it, I don't take it. Last time I took allopathic medicine, I think, was 12 years ago. Or longer, 15 or 16 years ago, when I got a chest infection and blood was coming out. So then I took my antibiotics because But the antibiotics did damage to my liver at the time. You know, because when you take the medicine, it kills the, but it kills everything else as well. Yeah, that's why the allopathic medicine, it should be avoided actually. So Prabhupada is saying that we should not worry about this world so much, but we should worry about becoming liberated from this world. That's the actual responsibility that all of us have. So, any points?
I was reading one book about Prabhupada's medical illnesses. It was a paper covered about 300 pages. And actually, it was written that Prabhupada had uremia. There was so much of nitrogen collected in the blood. Because of kidney failure, there was uremia. And it was a serious matter. It's a different thing, because he was fully realized. But the fact is that he needed medicine.
I was reading this book, My Glorious Christian Master, where Julian Prabhu is mentioning one pastor in Hong Kong. When Prabhupada was there, Prabhupada was not feeling 100%, he was not well.
Mm.
And Julian Prabhu, doing some research about the Chinese medicine,
mm.
said, Prabhupada, I wanted to suggest you this person who is very good at this medicine. You know, he's going to definitely feel better. And Prabhupada smiled at Julian Prabhu and said, I already told to my disciples as well earlier that don't take me to doctor if I am going to die. Just place tulsi on my head and chant Hare Krishna. That's it. So you can go to the doctor. So much of faith we have in Krishna.
Yeah, Chinese medicine is also good, but it's a little tamasic. They use a lot of mushrooms and things like that in the medicine. But it is very powerful, though. But they use different types of things. Ayurveda is usually our first choice. Any other points? What are you doing? I'm trying to speak about highly esoteric spiritual subject matter. Okay. Any other points?
About the same point, about diabetes is the endocrine disorder which causes a lot of problems in the heart, kidney, and eyes. So one has to be very careful that they don't lose vision. And if the kidney fails, high blood pressure, and heart failure, and edema, and if there's a high increased nitrogen level, people get very swelling of the legs. So diabetes is a terrible thing.
That's all caused by diabetes?
Hmm?
That's all caused by diabetes?
Yeah,
okay.
Diabetes.
So according to the American Health Organization,
yeah.
They've made a statement that diabetes is an incurable disease.
Correct.
Correct, okay. So I have a video which I've just given to Jai Sachi Prabhu, my godbrother, who has developed some diabetes. It's a video where by just eating raw food for 1 month, 5 people out of 6 become cured of diabetes. And the American Health Organization says it's an incurable disease. And these people prove that it's not an incurable disease. It's all based on diet. It's because the Western diet is so bad, that's why people have diabetes. If you eat properly, you can actually cure that which is supposed to be an incurable disease. So if you know some devotees who have diabetes, I have this video. Jai Sachibura has it at the moment, but we'll get it off him and I can pass through. Have you got that other one? I gave you go to the devotees. I need that back. So I can give it to others as well. So this one's very good as well. So if devotees have diabetes, most of these things can actually be cured. So many things can be cured. Most of the problems in our life are because of our diet. Because we eat processed food. Food which is in packets is processed. Right? 100 years ago, there was no food in packets. Interesting, right? Food in packets. It's like when I went away, I had a week off with my wife. So we're eating like breakfast cereal. You know, which comes from a packet. You know, because we're on a holiday and, you know, you're out in the middle of nowhere and stew. So you eat breakfast. I never eat breakfast cereal any other time of the year. Right? And I noticed that week I started feeling funny. I could feel it. It was making my body feel strange, like that, because it's a processed food. Right? Processed foods, that's what's causing our diseases, basically. Pretty much you cut out processed food, you're pretty much going to cut out the disease. 90%. I mean, disease, something will come, but 90%. That's what's causing it. All the problems in the world. Everyone's got diabetes and this problem and heart problem and high blood pressure and cholesterol and all that. Most of it's the food we eat. That's all it is. They put these six people, they put them on a raw diet, only raw food. They eat very nice food, but it's all raw, nothing cooked, vegetables and grains. For 1 month, five of them cure diabetes after 1 month.
Okay. I got a diabetes. I had it 4 years ago.
Okay.
The diet, I changed the diet. And the doctor gave me a pill. I was not taking pill, only a little bit. So I'm 100% I am under control. Still under control. It's not gone up. Sometimes I have to eat too. It's diet, you know. I always cook at home and half. You can do that. And plus cow liver and a lot of, you know, cow liver and a lot of that.
Yeah, there's alternatives to all these things.
Yeah.
See, devotees a lot of the time, as soon as they get something, they go straight to the allopathic method of dealing with it. That's not the method to deal with it.
Cow dung, you know, because they make the, you know, in the one, in the cow dung and punch cover.
Hmm.
If you take that one, cow even, and I think there's a lot of
food.
And for food. We have to hope you don't have to move.
On that point, you should understand diabetes of two types. One is the adult type, which happens because of high blood sugar. But the other one is children. They get early childhood, and that is not good.
On the video, they lower the guy who has type 2.
You know, juvenile diabetes. Juvenile diabetes, there is no cure.
Type 2.
You have to give insulin injection right from the beginning, from the childhood.
Yeah, this guy who has that from the beginning of his life, they cure it by like 80%. Like he's on a high level of insulin, they reduce it by 80% by the end of 1 month, just by eating a different type of food. So. Okay. You have a point?
I think Shankar Shapiro mentioned on his classes that Prabhupada said that he was mentioning, they were asking Prabhupada, there are some Ayurvedic medicines made with animal products. And he did, and if you look up where you can use them, Prabhupada said, yes, you can use this to maintain the health.
Yeah, there's an example, and Harry Sorbury says this. Prabhupada's very sick, I think it's in 77 or 76. There's a point where Prabhupada's very, very sick. And I know it might be Tamal Krishnamurti actually. I think Tamal Krishnamurti says it was in 77, near the end, Prabhupada's very sick. And Prabhupada asked for cod liver oil. Prabhupada himself, he says, get me cod liver oil. This will help to cure this thing like I've got. So Prabhupada asked, and they brought it, to Prabhupada. He didn't take it, because then he started feeling a bit better or something. But he actually asked for it at that point in time. Okay. So under very, I don't think I would do it, but Prabhupada did say under very severe circumstances that maybe you can take these kind of medicines like that. So there is permission. Okay, okay, we'll keep going. When seeds are sown on the ground and sometimes grown into plants and sometimes... Sorry. When seeds are sown in the ground, they sometimes grow into plants and sometimes do not. Sometimes the ground is not fertile and the sowing of seeds is unproductive. Similarly, sometimes a prospective father, being impelled by the potency of the Supreme Lord, can beget a child, but sometimes conception does not take place. Therefore, one should not lament over the artificial relationship of parenthood, which is ultimately controlled by the Supreme Lord. So, such as Sri Ramakrishna.
Maharaj, if you were actually not destined to get a son, therefore, although he married hundreds and thousands of wives, all of them proved barren, and he could not beget even one child. When Angira Rishi came to see the king requested to get his to enable him to have at least one son. Because of the blessing of Angira Rishi, a child was sent by the grace of Maya, but the child was not to live for long. Therefore, in the beginning, Angira Rishi told King that he would beget a child who would cause jubilation and lamentation. King Chitraketu was not destined to get a child by the providence or the will of the Supreme. Just as the sterile grain cannot produce more grain, a sterile person by the will of Supreme Lord cannot beget a child. Sometimes a child is born even to an impotent father and sterile mother, and sometimes a potent father and a fertile mother are childless. Indeed, sometimes a child is born despite contraceptive methods, and therefore the parent kills the child in the womb. In the present age, killing children in the womb has become a common practice. Why? When contraceptive methods are taken, why don't they act? Why is a child sometimes produced so that the father and mother have to kill it in the womb? We must conclude that our arrangement of so-called scientific knowledge cannot determine what will take place. What is enacted actually depends on the Supreme Will. It is by the Supreme Will that we are situated in certain conditions in terms of family, community, and personality. These are all arrangements of the Supreme Lord according to our desires under the spell of Maya illusion. In devotional life, therefore, one should not desire anything, since everything depends on Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desire for material profit or gain through the fruitful activities or the philosophical speculation. That is for pure devotion service. One should act only to develop Krishna consciousness. For everything else, one should fully depend upon the Supreme Person. We should not create plans that will ultimately make us frustrated.
What are the points in this?
Nothing moves without the will of the Lord, but the demigods have got some limited power within their jurisdiction to grant something to adjust our karma in such a way that we can get something. Somewhere I've read, could be in the worship of the service. So here we see that by thanks to Maya, he got a child. So Maya is actually, Maya Devi is considered as a demigod. So there is some adjustment that was made outside the jurisdiction of the Lord, of course, empowered by the Lord entirely. It's just like when you go to a bank, you don't have enough credit in your account. Still, the officer can give you an overdraft to an extent of maybe $50 or $100 or so. Some power the demigod.
Yeah, because it means that the demigods are the Lord's representatives. So when it says the Lord is giving permission for something to happen, generally that's through the demigods anyway. It doesn't mean Krishna directly is doing it. Usually he does it through his agents. So pretty much the demigods are involved at all times, generally. Any other points?
People are trying to sort of change their destiny. And we have seen that in many spheres of life, how people try to take shelter of medical advancement to change something that was otherwise not possible.
Mm.
It's an extension from the previous chapters that so far talked about Akama and Akama. The devotees don't try to change their destiny. Even when they suffer, they don't go to the Lord and what to speak of demigods, they don't even go to the Lord and ask them to change their destiny or alleviate their destiny. Just go on in that situation, continuing their service. Then the Prabhupada quotes the Pratyana Pampam verse. So the position becomes their right.
Lord, like Lord Ram came, but he was the personality of Godhead. And then, to behoove the one says him in the meditation, does it? And how do we the difference between demigod benediction and Lord Ram Insa in the way one says?
Is that a question or?
It's a question.
No, is it a question? I didn't hear it or understand it.
Lord Ram.
Yeah.
Has been Lord Raja Dasar, was not having children. And he had three wives, right? And then he has to go to the Rishi.
Dasharat.
Dasar, king, Dasar, son of Lord Ram.
Hmm.
Rama was Lord Ram was a personal Godhead.
Yeah.
But because of then Lord Rama has been, benediction has been given. It has been given by the Rishi, which is sort of demigod. So how could he give the benediction for the Lord to come down?
That's the Lord's arrangement. Okay. Or, you can ask Mahatma Prabhu's wife. Because normally she would ask a question like that. It's probably Krishna's arrangement like that. You see, in all of Krishna's pastime, the Lord makes arrangements before he comes. So it's part of his pastime that he arranges for something like that to happen. So there's different reasons why he does the pastime.
So
when
the devotee is very much
completely
absorbed, and the Lord makes an arrangement for you to come out of the illusion. So you think Chetaketu was too much attention to having a son, and he was making hundreds and thousands of wives, but it just created one son. So then this past time, the Spanish has to have Angira has to come and give him a blessing, which will fulfill his desire at the same time, invoke the detachment within him. So it looks like this is the arrangement by the Lord.
Yeah, ultimately. So we see here that it is being said that everything is ultimately happening by a higher arrangement. So we should become accepting of our destiny according to the Lord's will. Because sometimes things will happen not the way that we plan them, but obviously that is Krishna's desire. So when things are not in our control, we should just be accepting of those things. So ultimately the Bhagavatam is teaching us this lesson, that when something is going in a completely different way to what we may desire, that is Krishna's arrangement. Krishna has a higher arrangement for us. So sometimes there is reverses in our life. Sometimes things happen exactly the opposite to the way we would like them to happen. Why does that happen to us? Because it's Krishna's desire. So devotees, they have to learn to accept these things. That Krishna ultimately is seeing, he knows what is best for the devotee, and he's making the arrangement that the devotee will have the best thing for him. So when something happens, it appears to be a reverse, but actually, it's Krishna's arrangement or desire to bring us closer to him. So the devotee will always see it like that.
I have another question. I know a lady whose husband had a blockage of three coronary vessels in the heart. Now, that person, if you don't give them treatment, he won't survive in a couple of days. But if you give a stent in the vessel, he will survive. So won't you like that gentleman to stay alive when facilities are available? So, is it a dilemma or?
No, it's not a dilemma, because the devotee will, actually it is a personal choice, but for the devotee to extend one's life so that one can protect one's Krishna consciousness, that is not wrong. Okay. So generally we won't look at allopathic medicine, or we won't look at modern medical adjustments, but under certain circumstances we'll do it. Just like my spiritual master, he had cancer, so he chose to have surgery, which is the modern way of dealing with it. But then he said his justification was, it's a modern disease, so it needs a modern cure. So then he had the adjustment, and that extended his life, and then he continued to preach Krishna consciousness. So you can, but it's personal choice. Just like I told the story of Radha Kund Mataji, who was, what was the name of that? Krishna Bhavani. Krishna Bhavani was here, and she's gone back to India now. So her mother is Prabhupada's disciple, her father is Prabhupada's disciple. You see the, there's video footage of the morning walks at Juhu along the beach. Yashamani Nandan Prabhu, her father, is walking next to Prabhupada. Like, he's a very, very powerful devotee. He gives a Sunday feast lecture to 5,000 people every Sunday in Gujarat at the temple. He's a very powerful devotee. And her mother is extremely powerful. She runs Prabhupada's Samadhi. So she got cancer. And she just said, well, if Krishna wants to take me, he'll take me. If Krishna wants to cure me, he'll cure me. So she didn't do anything about it whatsoever. And then she was cured, and she's still living like that. Just complete faith on Krishna. Mother Jagatarini, she also got cancer. And then she said that, Mother Jagatarini was telling us, that, you know, some devotees, they say, well, just depend on Krishna. But then Mother Jagatarini said, no, it's not that simple. It's not that easy. It's easy to say that, but when it actually happens, not so easy to say, I'll just depend on Krishna. So she made some arrangements. She had surgery and did like that. But she said Radha Kund, this other, her god sister, she said she's so powerful that she just said, I will depend on Krishna. And she actually did that. And the cancer became cured by Krishna's desire, like that. But that's very powerful faith. That's very advanced Krishna consciousness. So you can intervene. It's personal choice. Some devotees will choose to just let it run its course, and other devotees will intervene. So whatever you think.
In the last sentence, one should act only to develop Krishna consciousness, but everything else, one should depend upon the Supreme Person. He should not create plans that will ultimately make us feel like that. Can you please shed some light on this?
Yeah, so ultimately it just means depend on Krishna, that's what it means. Yeah, material plan. It means you should depend on Krishna to work things out, not try to adjust things yourself so much. Let Krishna take control. That's the lesson. Okay. O King, both you and us, your advisors, wives and ministers, as well as everything moving and non-moving throughout the entire cosmos at this time, are in the temporary situation. But our birth... before our birth, this situation did not exist. And after our death, it will exist no longer. Therefore, our situation now is temporary, although it is not false. Yeah? So the Bhagavatam has already said, this material world is like a...
dream.
It is a dream situation. In other words, all of the anxiety that you're going through, it is simply... it's a dream. You're just dreaming. Does that make you feel better?
Yeah.
Does it make you feel better? Then you have to contemplate it. You're just dreaming at the moment. It's just a bad dream. It's not even really happening. You don't even have to be upset. Just like today, I was walking around, I come to the temple usually once a week. I come out of the forest. And I come to visit the sadhus. And I was walking around today, and I meet one devotee, and that devotee tells me I'm having so many problems. And then I met the other devotee, and they say, I'm having so many problems. Then I went to meet another devotee, and they were crying. They were having so many problems. This is the nature of this material world. We're suffering so much, but actually we're just dreaming. That's all. And it's easy for me to say that. Because sometimes I also cry. So it's easy to say these things, but actually all of us have to realize this point. We're just dreaming. It's not actually happening. It's just a dream. Just like when you're inside the dream, right, you identify with it, but when you wake up, it's just a dream. It didn't mean anything. So same now, we're just dreaming. That's all we're doing. It's just a dream. It doesn't really exist.
So we said that material world is real but temporary.
Yeah.
The dream is taking unrealistic. It's definitely implications.
Yeah, so this is, it's similar to that. It's slightly more real, but still it's a dream, ultimately. In other words, when you're finally in Goloka Vrindavan, it doesn't mean anything. So it's like the dream doesn't mean anything. Then when you're in Goloka Vrindavan, this doesn't mean anything. So important now, but it doesn't mean anything. So it should make you feel a little bit better. If you meditate on this, it should make you feel a bit better.
But doesn't it mean that, you know, we have to make the proper plans in the world to pass the things successfully?
It means that Rupa Goswami says we should be materially responsible. So in other words, you have to do all the right things in the material world to get through the material world properly. You can't be neglectful, but at the same time you have to understand not to take it too seriously, if that makes sense. In other words, don't put all of your energy into it. Put most of your energy into Krishna consciousness and then just do the other stuff just to keep body and soul together. Maintain your family and like that. Because your family are devotees. So maintain them so they can make advancement in Krishna consciousness. But don't make the maintenance the main thing. Right? Don't make going to dream world and movie world the main thing. Dream world is not the main thing. Dream world is a dream. Wet n Wild is a dream. Movie world is a dream. Warner Brother world is a dream. Even Sea World is a dream. It's good fun, but it's a dream. I went on the rides as well. I went to Dream World. I went on the rides. I went on the one that goes like that, then goes. But it's just a dream. Don't get too attached to it. My wife, because my wife's sister works for a company which is connected to them. So then we got cheap tickets, so she said, let's go to Dream World. I said, okay, so we went along and went on the ride. And she said, oh, let's go on this ride. It goes upside down, and then she got sick. And then she couldn't go on any more rides. So I went on a few more because I was there, but she couldn't go on anymore. People spend all this money to go to these places and they get sick. So funny. They spend all this money to have fun and then they just get sick. And then you have to wait 40 minutes to get on each ride. And everyone's fried as anything. Everyone's so upset. You know, it's supposed to be enjoying. Right? You're in the hot sun. You're waiting 40 minutes to get on the ride. Then the ride goes for 3 minutes and then you feel like throwing up. And that's enjoyment in the material world. material world key. I call it dream world. So funny. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master and proprietor of everything, is certainly not interested in the temporary cosmic manifestation. Nonetheless, just as a boy at the beach creates something in which he is not interested, the Lord, keeping everything under his control, causes creation, maintenance, and annihilation. He creates by engaging a father to beget a son. He maintains by engaging a government or king to see to the public's welfare. And he annihilates through agents for killing, such as snakes. The agents for creation, maintenance, and annihilation have no independent potency. But because of the spell of the illusory energy, one thinks himself a creator, maintainer, and annihilator. As from one seed another seed is generated, O King, so from one body, the body of the father, through another body, the body of the mother, a third body is generated, the body of the son. As the elements of the material body are eternal, the living entity who appears through these material elements is also eternal. Divisions of generalization and specification, such as nationality and individuality, are the imaginations of persons who are not advanced in knowledge. So then we get into the consciousness that I am Indian, I am Australian, I am man, I am woman, right? I am accountant, I am doctor, like that. So everyone gets into these upadis, like that. But these are just temporary designations. So So don't identify too much with them. Don't become proud of something which is false. Like that. Because as devotees, sometimes we introduce ourselves, I do this, I do this, and we're proud of that. But actually, that's just a temporary situation. So don't become too proud of something which is not actually you. I'm an IT expert. Don't become too proud of that. Don't become too proud of all these material designations. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, thus enlightened by the instructions of Narada and Angiraj, King Chitraketu became hopeful with knowledge. Wiping his shriveled face with his hand, the king began to speak. So you see the power of Divya Gyan. Even when you're in such a distressful situation, just like one friend of mine, one devotee, she lost a child. The child was stillborn, like that. So very traumatic for the parents. To have a child. Fortunately, she already had two children. But then the third child was born stillborn. So it's very sad like that. So she was very upset, naturally. But then she went to Jananivas Prabhu, our great devotee, and he spoke to her these kind of instructions. And immediately she became alleviated of so much of her suffering. Like that. So when you hear these instructions from the very exalted person, it completely alleviates the consciousness. So if you are suffering, then you need to hear from advanced devotees, and that will relieve your suffering. King Chitraketu said, "You have both come here dressed like avadhuts, liberated persons, just to cover your identity. But I see that of all men, you are the most elevated in awareness. You know everything as it is. Therefore, you are the greatest of all great personalities." So we have to find these kind of devotees. We have to find devotees like Devashi Narada and Angira. So they exist in this world. They exist in our movement. They are our spiritual masters. So we have to find them and get their association whenever we can. Just like, unfortunately, I won't get to see Veda Vyas Priya Maharaj. He's coming here to have his Vyasa Puja. So all of us should come. Disciples, whether you're a direct disciple or not, you should come. And you should honor the guru who is going to be honored and worshipped on that day. I lament that I won't be here on that occasion to honor Maharaj in that way. Devamrita Swami is coming very soon. All these great personalities, so take shelter of them. They will liberate us. They are our saviors, they are our liberators from the bonds of material energy. They will liberate us from this material world. Brahmanas who are exalted to the position of Vaishnavas, the most dear servants of Krishna, sometimes dress like madmen, just to benefit materialists like us, who are always attached to sense gratification, and just to dissipate our ignorance. These Vaishnavas wander on the surface of the globe according to their desire. O great souls, I have heard that among the great and perfect persons wandering the surface of the earth to instruct knowledge to people covered by ignorance are Sanat Kumara, Narada, Ripu, Angira, Devala, Asita, Apantaratma, Vyasadeva, Markandeya, Gautama, Vashishta, Bhagavan, Parashurama, Kapila, Shukadeva, Devasa, Yajnavalkya, Jatukarna, and Aruni. Others are Romasha, Chavana, Dattatreya, Asuri, Patanjali, the great sage, Domya, who is like the head of the Vedas, and the sage, Panchashika, and Hiranya Napa, Kaushala, Shrutadev, and Richardwaj, who are certainly, you must certainly be among them. Because you are great personalities, you can give me real knowledge. I am as foolish as a village animal, like a pig or a dog, because I am immersed in the darkness of ignorance. Therefore, please ignite the torch of knowledge to save me. Shishastiham sadimam tvam prapannam. Krishna says, sorry, Arjuna says to Krishna, now I'm your disciple. I am a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So when you have the right attitude towards the spiritual master, towards the advanced Vaishnavas, then they begin to instruct you. So because he has this attitude, and he is humble, and he is submissive, then he is begging them to instruct him and save him. So if we have the right attitude, then they will deliver us. Okay, so next Monday is your closed book exam. It will be 7 o'clock here in the theatre. You have 2 hours, so Chaitanya Prabhu, make sure they only go for 2 hours, not 2 hours and 5 minutes. Okay, so we'll have a short watch. You have 2 hours for your exam. And then next Tuesday night, we will attempt to have the class. So please give me your blessings that I can have a proper break and I can regain my health properly so that I can serve you all more in the future. So give me your well wishes and your prayers. And hopefully we can continue the classes in the next 3 or 4 weeks via the phone system. Srila Prabhupada.